He's the columnist for the Register Guard. Find his work on the cover of the sports section a few times a week. Check out registerguard.com. You can become a follower on Twitter. Please use the handle at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are you?
Hey, Steve, nice to know your bar nice and low for us today. That's right where I like it.
Everybody needs their own comfort zone, Austin. you know, your name came up last week. I was out on Friday, and we were talking about media in this town, paper, radio, the Duck website, TV. And somebody says, I always introduce you as a columnist. And they wanted to know, when you worked in Kansas, were you ever a beat writer? Have you always been a columnist? And do you have a preference, or is it always just, you know, whatever the best gig available is?
I definitely was a beat writer. That's how I started. I think that's the traditional path, as most people start that way. And I also did some columns when I worked in Topeka, but primarily I was a beat writer. It's different. It's been an interesting transition for me going from one job to the other. I love being a columnist. It's the job that I always wanted to have, the dream job for me, I guess. It's different. It's hard in a different way, because when you're the beat guy, the story is always right in front of you. You know, you write whatever the news of the day is.
Right.
As the columnist, you're sort of trying to think a little bit beyond that and come up with stuff that's off the beaten path. So you write a lot less. You know, I write 3 columns a week compared to when I was a beat guy. I was writing, you know, 1 or 2 stories a day sometimes. But the columns you write a lot of times take a lot more planning and a lot more preparation that goes into it. And it's just hard to come up with ideas. You know, that's the hardest part of the job for me, is trying to keep it fresh and coming up with interesting columns that maybe are a little bit off the beaten path.
Yeah, now, so which beat did you cover? Was it Kansas sports?
Yeah, I actually did both. I did Kansas State. That was my first job.
Okay.
And then I covered the University of Kansas. And then I actually did both of them for a while, which was fun.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm out, I'll run into people and they'll start talking about sports and be like, I bet you get sick of this. And I was like, well, not really, because there's a million things to talk about. But I've talked to Rob Mosley about this and Ryan and other guys, and I wonder if you ever ran into this where you had one of those weeks where if somebody asked me about Kansas State, fill in the blank, I'm going to lose my mind, because that's all you've been doing all week.
Well, you know, there were certain stories that you kind of got sick of talking about,
right?
You know, things that the fan base would obsess over, that you would just get so tired of, or, you know, questions that you would get asked a million times. But in general, though, I always enjoyed, and I mean this sincerely, I'm not just blowing smoke, I always enjoyed interacting with fans. You know, I appreciated that fans, you know, cared what I thought about anything, which is, you know, I don't take that for granted, but for the most part, I always enjoy the interaction.
Now, before we get to the spring game, you wrote a piece yesterday about the Eugene Marathon. Richard Lutzinger, who ran his first marathon in 1978, his goal was to run 100 of them. So I'm reading the story about he got stuck on 98, and you figure, you know, age, injury, a lot of reasons you can't run 26 miles. But for those who missed it, I mean, this guy faced the ultimate obstacle, didn't he?
Yeah, Richard is a really amazing guy, and I've gotten to know him just a little bit. He's led a really interesting life, first of all. I mean, there's a ton of things that he's done in his life that, you know, just are really fascinating. But, yeah, his goal was to run 100 marathons. He's 77 years old, and he got to 99. But the backstory is, 4 years ago, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he's actually run 9 marathons since getting diagnosed.
Wow.
And he was, like I said, he was at 99, but the form of prostate cancer he has is very aggressive, and they haven't really been able to find a way to treat it very effectively. So basically, he's just kind of run out of time. They realize that in the condition he's in, there's just no way he's going to be able to run another marathon. But his doctor did something really cool this weekend, where he arranged for Richard to finish the Eugene Marathon as part of a relay team. He's a member of a running group in Eugene, has a lot of really good friends in that group. So they all sort of came together and helped him get across the finish line one more time, even if he didn't do the the full marathon. It was kind of cool for him to be able to carry the baton over the finish and have that one more memory.
Yeah, now who was his doctor? And from what I read, I mean, you know, this isn't the 1950s where doctors grab a bag and make a house call. I mean, how unique and how wowed was Richard and his family and his friends by a doctor willing to do this?
Yeah, his doctor's name is Brian Melhoff, and he's a doctor at the Oregon Urology Institute. And, yeah, you know, really has gone above and beyond, and it's meant a lot to Richard here in kind of the last years of his life to have a doctor who's been willing to do that for him. And actually, Brian, the doctor, had agreed to run the marathon with Richard if they could get him to 100, and I think he felt, you know, even though it wasn't his fault, I think he felt bad about the fact that they weren't able to get him to 100, so he was the one who made these arrangements to do the relay and the marathon, even though the marathon technically doesn't have a relay division. But he arranged this all kind of as a surprise for Richard to give him that one day there.
It was awesome. And obviously we send our best wishes and hopes. Now we have to take a deep breath. And with the understanding our next topic's not as serious, I will ask you about the spring game, the quarterbacks. In talking with a lot of people, I'm getting this. Prukop might not be the equal of Vernon Adams from a spectacular point of view, but if he were to get the job, struggle, or get injured, be it Johnson or Wilson, the drop-off won't be as fatal or severe as we witnessed in the Alamo Bowl. Is that in the neighborhood?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. You know, I did come away from the spring with the impression that, assuming Prukop's the guy, which is still my assumption, even though it seems like the competition is maybe a little more real than I gave it credit for, assuming that Prukop is the guy, it's going to be a pretty jarring change in style to go from Vernon Adams to him. Because, you know, Vernon's M.O. was he was chuck the deep ball if he had any opportunity. You know, he was going to scramble around and make a play and look down the field and try to make the big play. I mean, that was his nickname, right? Big Play
right.
VA. I don't think anybody's talking about Big Play Dakota right now, because his MO seems to be take the safe throw, don't make a mistake. You know, maybe he'll throw it down the field if it's there, but he's also content to take the check down and, you know, the short throw over the middle. So, you know, it's just going to be different. And I think Dakota Prukop could end up having a really good year, but he's going to go about it a lot differently than Vernon Adams did, for sure.
Wouldn't we be more accurate in calling him Big Sky Dakota because of the conference he played in?
There you go. Maybe we can get that to stick. That's good.
We had Dakota on Friday for the second time. And he just comes across as wise beyond his years, super smart. And, of course, while new to Oregon, he's had a lot of seasoning as a college student and player. Then in the game, you kind of mentioned his style. You saw limited mistakes, not going to force it, checkdowns. But with the way this team is shaping up and maybe this ridiculous arsenal at his disposal, you think that maybe provided us some accurate foreshadowing for not only the kind of quarterback he might be, but what they want him to be?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I don't think Oregon needs him to chuck the ball down the field like Vernon Adams did. I mean, it's great if you've got a quarterback who can do that and you can make those big plays, but you know, there's more than one way to go about it. And, you know, if he can bring maybe a level of consistency to the quarterback position that Vernon didn't always have, you know, the production could end up being similar. And there will be playmakers around him. I mean, gosh, look at Royce Freeman and Darren Carrington and Dylan Mitchell in that spring game looked like he could be a player. So there's no shortage of talent at the skill positions. And I think if Dakota Prukop can make good decisions with the ball and then bring a quarterback running element to the offense that, frankly, Oregon didn't really have with Vernon. You know, he was elusive and he was mobile, but he wasn't really a big play threat as a runner.
Right.
And I think that's maybe where we'll see Dakota Prukop make more big plays. And, you know, you don't have that element in the spring game, so it's hard to judge. But I really think, you know, he may be a big play threat with his legs more so than with his arm.
Talking with Austin Mika, the Register guard, you mentioned Dylan Mitchell, a wide receiver who's going to try and break into a pretty talented field. I mean, let's not forget Devin Allen is coming back. He was recruited in football and hoops. State of Tennessee, Gatorade Player of the Year, just crazy athletic. You mentioned him in passing, but how much of what you saw of him on Saturday kind of jumped off the page?
Well, I think he was maybe the guy that they were most excited about in this recruiting class because, like you said, he's from SEC country, had SEC offers, decided to come out here and play at Oregon. Anytime you can pull a guy from that part of the country of his caliber, I think they're going to be really excited about that. And, you know, the first pass he had, he kind of alligator-armed it. It's like, man, you know, I thought this guy was supposed to be really good, and then he showed by the rest of the scrimmage why everybody thinks that, because he, you know, a couple of those catches he made just kind of came out of nowhere and was able to make a play in midair on the ball. It looks to me like he's certainly a candidate to play and play a pretty significant role, because you don't know what the deal is going to be with Devin Allen, where he'll be at after his chase to the Olympics. And, you know, a couple other guys, Dwayne Stanford and Jaylen Brown, didn't play in the scrimmage. And you don't know how all that will fit together. But based on what we saw from Dylan Mitchell on Saturday, I think certainly he's got a great chance to play a pretty big role.
Now, after the game in the Sunday paper, your primary postgame topic, the subject was Brady Hoke and the defense. And with so many factors from, you know, new quarterbacks, the rules of a spring game, kind of curious, what did Coach Hoke think of the performance of his guys, not only Saturday, but from what he's been seeing all spring?
You know, they had 10 sacks on Saturday. He didn't seem to be taking any victory laps for that,
Yeah. Considering
it was two-hand touch for the quarterbacks. I don't think he read a lot into that sack total. But he's been pretty, I would say, pretty stingy with his praise this year of the defense this spring. And I think that's probably warranted because, you know, if he was coming in here after one spring taking over a defense that was one of the worst in the FBS last year and talking like everything was great, I think there would be some warranted skepticism about that. So he's been pretty realistic, and he was pretty realistic after the spring game that, you know, they're in the middle of a pretty big transition, and frankly, he said it has not progressed as quickly as he would have hoped. But I think there's probably a little tempering of expectations there from the fact that, you know, they know that it's going to be kind of an uphill climb on defense this next year because they're making a big change with guys who were recruited to play one way, and now they're making the pieces fit the best they can, but it's going to take some time. I don't think coming out of this spring there's any idea that Brady Hoke is going to be a miracle worker or they're suddenly going to have a top 20 defense next year. I don't get that sense at all.
Well, it's not very realistic. All right, final thought. Just the second time in over 20 years, Ducks didn't have an offensive player in the NFL draft. You know, the other time, 2010, but, you know, they almost won a national title that year. I've said it a bunch of times, I don't really buy Vernon Adams as an NFL quarterback. But whether it's Ty Johnstone, Braylon Addison, Byron Marshall, Matt Pearson, any of this surprise you that nobody else got a look on offense or kind of expected?
Well, I think I was a little more bullish than you were on Vernon Adams' potential at the next level, and ultimately the NFL people agreed with your assessment, obviously. You know, Vernon didn't get drafted and basically just got an invitation to rookie camp, so he's really going to have to fight for a spot on the roster. I was a little surprised. You know, I thought maybe we'd see Byron Marshall get drafted. I thought maybe we'd see Braylon Addison get drafted. You know, I'm never going to say that a guy should turn down the opportunity to go make money in order to come back and play for free. You know, so I don't begrudge those guys for leaving when they did. But you do have to wonder if maybe after that final round of the draft when they didn't hear their names called, either of those guys thought, maybe I should have stuck it out for one more year in college. I don't know. But I was a little surprised that Oregon didn't have an offensive player drafted just based on the success they've had on that side of the ball.
All right, you can find his work in the Register Guard. You can find him here to get us rolling every Tuesday on Twitter at Austin Meek RG, the columnist, Austin Meek. Good to talk to you as always, Austin. Have a good one.
All right, you too, Steve.